Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Friday, July 29, 2022 edition of On Iowa Politics. This week, the Kem Reynolds Court, a career Iowa Republican congressman endorses Democrats, a close AG campaign, and Todd tells Iowa Democrats to show him the money. We've never done audio clip inserts here. I'll leave it up to our producer whether he wants to insert that Jerry Maguire clip right there. Otherwise, just imagine it, podcast listeners. You know what I'm talking about. Hello, everyone. I'm Aaron Murphy, the Des Moines Bureau Chief for the Gazette in Cedar Rapids. With me today are Gazette Deputy Bureau Chief Tom Barton. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Aaron.
Sarah Watson of the Quad City Times. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, and happy pre-Bix Day. Tomorrow is the Bix 7 in Davenport, and everybody is getting excited for that homecoming.
Big day, big annual day in the Quad Cities this weekend. Jared McNett of the Sioux City Journal is here. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning, Aaron. You know, I get up every morning and I go to podcast each day.
Fantastic. And finally, Gazette opinion editor Todd Dorman. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
All right. First up this week, Iowa got its newest Iowa Supreme Court justice when Governor Kim Reynolds appointed David May, who has been serving as a state appeals court judge since 2019. Once May officially takes his seat on the court, five of the seven justices will have been appointed by Reynolds, and all of the justices will have been appointed by Republicans. Jared, let me start with you. This seems significant given some of the decisions that the Iowa Supreme Court has been asked to make recently and the kinds of decisions that it will be asked to make again here in the near future, especially on abortion. Has the Iowa Supreme Court, despite what was designed to be a nonpartisan system, become a little more like the U.S. Supreme Court, where judicial appointments are essentially political appointments?
Yeah, so I got curious about this on a couple of different levels of government, and I started looking first at some data on the Supreme Court level. And in 2015, there was this research to look into how often Supreme Court justices went with the party of the person who appointed them. And what they found is that from 1937 through 2014, all but one of the justices examined voted at least a majority of the times with the appointing president. And the mean there was like 65% of the time. Now, you know, you can say that's just one study and that's looking at national trends. That's not state level. Why do we care? But, you know, that's not an insignificant partisan lean that's presented there. And I'm not aware of any Iowa level look into this, but I can't really imagine a world where Iowa is somehow immune from a partisan lean like that, especially when you consider that, you know, Iowa is a state now that's really started to tilt in one direction. And, you know, this is a state with not too distant memories of judicial recall, recalls happening, which are a means of disciplining on some level. So if you really would like to keep offering your well-reasoned legal arguments, you know, maybe you start making more of an effort to go along with and get along with the folks who brought you to the dance. And if someone in a position that is highly partisan, like the governor of a state or the president, picks you, they didn't likely do that just because you're a law maestro. You know, part of their calculus is also that they think that you see the world the way they see the world oftentimes, and they also are making that choice in part because they believe you'll make rulings that make their agenda easier. And I know all of this is speculative on my part on some level, but it's also human nature. Usually, if you get an important job, you're going to want to keep that job, and you're going to want to do what it takes to keep that job.
Yeah, and look, this isn't intangible. We have a very recent ruling here by this Iowa Supreme Court that overturned a previous ruling of all of 4 years ago on abortion here. So, I mean, this isn't a discussion in a vacuum here either. So your points are well taken, Jared. And it's interesting to me because, you know, having following the legislature and some of the little tweaks, Iowa's system was of selecting judges was built to remove politics as much as possible by having the, you know, the nominating commissions. The governor doesn't just get to pick a candidate from, you know, the whole universe of Iowa judges. She gets a list of finalists sent to her by this nominating commission. But, you know, the facts are that the state legislature under its current Republican majority, has made it easier for the governor to get, you know, like-minded people onto those commissions and in majorities on those commissions and in places of leadership on those commissions. So when those finalists are presented to the governor, those finalists are all, you know, have been through a process that is, you know, has been led by a political majority. So even Iowa's system is not immune, especially as it's recently been tweaked. All right, moving on this week. We shift now to the campaign trail, again, where every good Iowa political reporter belongs, where a former congressman is switching parties to make some endorsements. Very interesting story this week out of the Quad Cities. Jim Leach, who represented Eastern Iowa in the U.S. House as a Republican for 30 years, said this week that he is endorsing Democrat Christina Bohannon in what is essentially the district that Leach used to represent. Now, redistricting over the years shuffles that around a little bit, but essentially the similar district. Leach said he also plans to support Democrat Mike Franken in Iowa's U.S. Senate campaign against longtime Republican incumbent Chuck Grassley. Sarah, you had this story first this week. Tell us why former Republican Congressman Leach said he is now endorsing Democrats.
Yeah, so Jim Leach, in my conversation with him, he's been critical for the last several years of the rise of Trumpism in the Republican Party. And even during his time in Congress, he was fairly moderate Republican and has endorsed a few Democrats for president, including Barack Obama and Joe Biden, once Republican Bill Weld dropped out of the 2020 presidential race. But this is really the first time that he's come out publicly in support of Democrats for Congress. He didn't make an endorsement last year when Rita Hart and Marionette Miller Meeks were running against each other. And so he's really been critical. When I talked with him, main shtick was the rise of Trumpism in the Republican Party. He especially in the wake of the January 6th insurrection, really said he felt like the National Republican Party was letting the country down. And, you know, although several are Iowa Republican representatives publicly have decried that violence, they've also been accepted endorsements from Donald Trump. And in the case of Chuck Grassley, Marionette Miller Meeks was notably not endorsed by Donald Trump, but she has said she's a pro-Trump candidate. And so really it seems like the former representative is criticizing this pro-Trumpism shift in the Republican Party.
And he was, Sarah, and forgive me if I missed it, I don't think you mentioned this, but he was one of the former Republican leaders, and this was a nationwide thing, that signed a letter, and someone else helped me fill in the blanks here. I can't remember what the population, what the universe of the types of leaders that basically was saying that, expressing disappointment in former Republican President Trump at the time. Jim Leach signed one of those letters, as I recall, and the details are escaping me, so forgive me. But he's been in this camp for a few years now, is the point. Sarah, so here's the question. This is an endorsement. So the question is, does this help, and I'll ask about your race, does this help Christina Bohannon in her campaign against Marionette Miller Meeks in your best view?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think Jim Leach seems to have a lot of people respect Jim Leach in at least the Democratic camp, and maybe some of the independents or moderate camp, especially some older folks that remember him from his time in office. But it is still just an endorsement from a 79-year-old former congressman who hasn't been in office for 10, 15 years, if I'm adding correctly. And so, you know, we know that endorsements aren't everything, but it is a, And he worked with Christina Bohannon at the University of Iowa. He was a visiting professor, and she's a College of Law professor. So, you know, it might sway a few people, but I think, as we've seen, endorsements aren't everything in a race.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Jared.
You're on mute.
Jared, you got to unmute yourself.
I kind of wondered too if the fact that he, if I remember correctly, he spoke at like the DNC in 2008, and he served some kind of like humanities role in the Obama administration for like a brief time. If that blunts the surprise of this at all, versus if like he had just completely come out of nowhere and made this endorsement, or if that doesn't matter too much and it's still a big deal either way.
I think that's definitely fair to say.
Yeah, to me, it seems like the universe of voters that this maybe impacts is if there are any Republicans, you know, in the second district, or if we're talking about the Senate race in Iowa, who are having similar, you know, internal consternation as the kind that Jim Leach has described in the last few years with the Republican Party, and still has been voting Republican, and maybe they see, well, if Jim Leach has made that transition, it's okay for me to vote for a Democrat or two as well. Now, how big is that universe of Iowa of Republican voters? I think it's fair to question the size of that population. But, it's interesting. And just to fact check myself, the letter I was trying to remember was former national security officials who signed a letter in 2020 calling former President Trump unfit to serve. So his opposition to President Trump goes back at least that far. And also, Sarah, I wanted to say thank you for the real-time display of journalists trying to do math as you tried to figure out how long Congressman Leach is in office. That was perfect.
You were wondering how many people would, you know, how much support it would gain. As long as it's more than six people, it could be high impact.
It's a really good in that point, district. Right? Yeah, Marionette Miller Meeks is Congresswoman because of six votes over Rita Hart in 2020. That's a really good point, Todd. All right, moving on elsewhere on the campaign trail, there was a nugget in some new polling that we actually talked about last week. The poll itself, but I missed this little item in a poll conducted by Signal for the Conservative Iowans for Tax Relief Foundation. Democratic Iowa Attorney General Tom Miller is statistically tied with Republican challenger Brenna Byrd, who's a former legal counsel to former Iowa Governor Terry Branstad. Tom, I think most of us expected a closer campaign here than Miller is used to. Did we expect it to be this close?
Honestly, I did not. Iowans traditionally like their incumbents, and Miller is the longest serving attorney general in the U.S. He has deep ties to the state and tends to draw less partisan ire than some other elected officials. But, you know, 2022 is expected to be a strong year for Republicans broadly, and Iowa Republicans are looking to capitalize. Byrd ran against Miller in 2010, and somebody can fact check me if I'm wrong here on my recollection. I think lost by 11 percentage points. But the political climate and landscape in Iowa is much different. It's much more conservative. It's much more favorable to Republicans than Democrats, with an extremely unpopular Democratic president, record high inflation, and an economy that looks headed toward a recession. Byrd has vowed to push back against President Joe Biden's administration. And I think just given how unpopular Biden and his administration is right now, given the responses that we saw from Iowans in the recent Iowa poll, feeling that the nation and the economy are headed in the wrong direction for, you know, vastly different reasons, you know, all of that, it isn't going to play well for, you know, entrenched Democratic incumbents, even a state attorney general, you know, who, again, has been in office for, you know, more than 30 years, approaching, I think, nearly 40. You know, I think that there are Iowans, there are voters who like the idea of having a Republican in there who would be willing to challenge the president and some of the administration's policies. And I think that maybe that's why this race has gotten so close. And fundraising too, I believe. Aaron, you can correct me if I'm wrong. You did the last story looking at the fundraising numbers. But it looks like Tom Miller, you know, didn't really raise a lot of money, and Brenna Byrd being very competitive in that respect as well.
Yeah, that's right. And he especially got off to a slow start. His most recent period, things picked up a little bit, I assume, maybe recognizing the challenge in front of him. And he's kind of closed that gap to where I think, if I remember right, overall in the cycle, the numbers have evened out a little bit, but Brenna Byrd definitely got off to a very strong start and started out ahead of Tom Miller in fundraising. And you said it, Tom, you know, Republicans sense the, you know, the political winds blowing and think this is an office that they can finally get in and very much believe and want a win in this race. And for some of the reasons you outlined, and look, we don't have to guess about this. Again, the Republican legislature wanted to essentially strip that office's right to, in, you know, on its own, make decisions about what federal lawsuits to join because they didn't like that the Democratic attorney general was joining lawsuits against the Republican president. And so this is clearly an office that the Republicans would like to see as part of their unified control of state government. And of course, Governor Reynolds made the comment at a fundraiser that she wants, and I forgive me for not remembering the exact verbiage that she used, but wanting one of her people, you know, in that office, essentially saying she wants a Republican in that office, which is, you know, ideally, and aren't we all a bunch of dewy-eyed idealists in this room, but ideally, is an independent office that works on the behalf of the people, not on behalf of the governor.
And to that point, you know, this week we've seen the AG's office doing its best to remind Iowans and voters of that, you know, sending out a press release talking about Iowa being among a dozen states that negotiated a framework for an agreement with opioid maker Teva. The AG's office just now sent out a press release saying that it reached another $1 billion agreement with a former opioid maker. That's a tough word. And then yesterday, you know, we saw the news conference where he talked about suing tobacco companies for, according to the AG's office, you know, not abiding by that kind of master settlement agreement that was struck back in the late 90s. Was that 97? Anyway,
thereabouts. Yeah. And boy, what a crazy coincidence that these all are happening now in a campaign year as the campaign.
Weird. It's like he's up for re-election or something.
Can you be an idealist and a cynic at the same time? Simultaneously, are those mutually exclusive? All right, finishing up this week. It's a little old now because this column came out shortly after we recorded last week's podcast. But I wanted to make sure we talked about it this week because I thought it was really interesting. Our very own Todd Dorman wrote a column that I wanted to bring up. I'll let him describe his thoughts in greater detail if he likes, but essentially it boils down to Todd wrote that he's wondering why the big money Democratic donors are not investing in Iowa's gubernatorial campaign. Deidre DeGere, the Democratic challenger, continues to be far, far outpaced in fundraising by Governor Reynolds. Todd, tell us a little more about what you wrote and why you think the Democratic donor class should be listening.
I'm actually a little old now too, so that's okay. Well, you know, I basically looked at a few things. I mean, obviously, Governor Kim Reynolds is, excuse me, Governor Kim Reynolds is very unpopular among Democrats. I think in the most recent Des Moines Register, MediaCom, am I missing any other sponsors poll? It showed
that, I think you got them all.
Yeah, it showed with Reynolds at a 17-point lead over DeGier. But what was striking to me is that DeGier had the support of 78% of Democrats, which sounds good, but compare that to, say, Mike Franken, who's got 88%. Kim Reynolds has 91% of Republicans. So I thought that was odd, considering that her approval rating among Democrats, the governor's approval rating among Democrats, is 10%. So the poll was not exactly didn't not only look good at the top line, it also showed maybe some problems in the Democratic base. I mean, 5% of Democrats said they were going to vote for Rick Stewart, which I thought was a pretty significantly large number, knowing Rick and his platform. I mean, he is against the war on drugs, so maybe that's part of what that's about. And then you looked at the fundraising, and of course, you know, the governor has $5.2 million in the bank, raised like almost $370,000 between May and July. DeGier's got about $500,000 in the bank and raised about $230,000 during that period, or $250,000. So lagging fundraising. And if you look through the fundraising numbers, you know, during this period and the previous periods, I mean, you're just, a lot of the names of the donors that you're used to seeing give, you know, $25,000-$50,000 to Democratic candidates, they're just not there. The ISEA hasn't donated to DeGier yet, and she's arguably challenging the most anti-public education governor we've seen, at least in modern history. So the question is, why is that? I mean, and some of the answers are, you know, could make Democrats pretty uncomfortable. I mean, we heard from Roz Smith back in December talking about how people wouldn't return his phone calls or take meetings with him, and is this DeGier making history? Is this making big donors uncomfortable somehow that they're not? I mean, that's pretty shameful if that's the truth. And then, you know, do they just think she can't win? Which, you know, yes, the polling doesn't look good, but that's, you know, as always, a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you don't give a candidate resources, then they're at a disadvantage. I mean, she can't get on television and get herself known and get her message widely heard without
Thank
money.
You, God. And forgive me for interrupting, but I wanted to, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you as a follow up here, because I assume that if you managed to pin anybody down on this, what they would tell you as well, you invest money in the races you think you have a chance to win, and maybe they don't think DeGier does. You raised a great point. Part of that, though, is a self-fulfilling prophecy thing, especially given some of the numbers. Look, when you talk about 78% of Democrats only approve of Deidre DeGier, that screams to me that there's roughly 20% that just don't know who Deidre DeGier is yet. You know,
yeah, that's entirely like possible.
Which again, comes back to, for better or worse, like it or not, the fundraising issue, because you need those resources to run a campaign, to travel the state, and to get yourself on TV, which, as far as I'm aware anyways, Deidre DeGier has not been able to do yet in the general election season. She does not have had a TV campaign ad yet. So I think it's a fair question you ask there, and about, you know, it's a cycle. Well, if you don't donate, or if, you know, if a candidate isn't seen as viable, then maybe they won't donate. Well, if you don't donate, they're not going to have a chance to become viable.
Well, and you know, under normal political circumstances, if anyone can remember when there were normal political circumstances, I understand why people didn't, you know, donate to Jack Hatch when he ran against Branstad in 2014. He wasn't really a compelling candidate. Branstad was popular, and I mean, just, it wasn't as high a stakes. I mean, this 2020 race, I mean, 2022, what year is it? I mean, this is a high stakes
race.
Time
is a social construct, Todd.
I know. It's a flat circle. So, I mean, what's going to happen if Kim Reynolds gets reelected is that there's going to be severe limits on abortion rights. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be probably school vouchers taking money away from public schools. I mean, all sorts of things that Democrats have been, you know, vehemently criticizing and working hard against are going to happen if they don't step up and try to make this a race. I mean, so the idea that it's sort of like, well, I know I've seen the poll, she can't win. It's, you got to maybe do something this time, because if the state, you know, goes redder this fall, the Democratic Party is, I don't know where they go from there. I mean, it's, they cease to be much of a factor, especially if the governor can use her war chest to help Brenna Byrd and the other, you know, Democrat, the other Republicans running statewide and legislative candidates. So, I mean, they may come out of this election controlling the whole thing. I don't think that's a time to sit on your money and wait for next time.
What I wonder is what's to account for, say, you know, fundraising going really well for, like, after Roe v. Wade got kicked to the curb, there were plenty of Iowa Democrats that, you know, fundraised off of that we need to stop this from happening here. But then you don't necessarily see that trickling up to the gubernatorial race, because, like, guess what? You can fundraise all you want just on the issue, but if the governor is not of the party that you're supporting, then it doesn't matter how much money you pump in to those kind of fundraising efforts. They're sort of doomed.
Well, yeah, and then there was the sort of the shake your head part of the abortion rights poll that the Register did, where 24% of people who said abortion should be legal all or most of the time plan to vote for Kim Reynolds. So that's, I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, and just to go back to, you know, if the big donor Democrats, you know, sit out of this race and Deidre Dejere cannot, you know, doesn't have the resources to put up a good fight, and Kim Reynolds just completely routes Deidre Dejere, she can come back and say, I have a mandate for all of these policies and I can do all of these things. And if it was even if she didn't win, even if Deidre Dejere didn't win and she just made it a close race, that could still maybe, you know, put a damper on some of those policies. Like I just remember after Kim Reynolds was first elected with against Fred Hubble, and I remember her, you know, the felon voting rights, and she seemed to play much closer to the center.
Yeah, it and the whole, to me, and I've been saying this in the past, that the defeatist sort of attitude among Iowa Democrats right now in this race, just, and I don't know if I'm missing something, Aaron.Murphy@thegazette.com to all you Flax and whoever's out there who knows the answer to this question that I'm completely missing. This is a governor that won by all of 2.8 percentage points 4 years ago. This isn't Terry Branstad running for reelection after he just wiped up 98 out of 99 counties. Won by less than 3% 4 years ago, and in that meantime has had myriad issues on which you can, you know, at the very least make an argument about. Obviously, any issue, people are going to fall in their political silos, but there's any number of issues that we could list off that could resonate with persuadable voters and have a discussion in the debate and raise questions about Governor Reynolds' record. So the idea that she was untouchable coming into this race just has confounded me from the start. Do not, to anybody who's starting an email, send me that 17% margin in the Iowa poll, because that's, again, as we've discussed, you know, when you've got a challenger who hasn't been able to present themselves and make their case yet, of course you're going to have that. She's basically running against no one, or as a certain Gazette Des Moines Bureau reporter wrote recently, she's basically running against Joe Biden right now. So it just, I don't get it. I'd love to hear the explanation to that.
If you see her campaign, I mean, if you talk to her and you know, watch her out on the trail, she's a stronger candidate than Fred Hubble was. I mean,
Deidre Dejere, you're talking about.
Nothing against Fred, but she's just has a more compelling message. And
I think that's fair. I think she's a better communicator at the very
least. But he had a huge pile of money, which that helped, obviously. Too much money, though, because they called him Sir Fred.
It's a fine line. Here we are now. Now we're criticizing a candidate for having too much money. There's just no pleasing us, Todd.
There are rich people that Republicans don't like. That was a revelation during that campaign.
All right. Well, we've got many more On Iowa Politics podcast to figure this all out. And as this campaign goes on, for now, that's it for this edition. We hope you enjoyed it. If you do, tell your friends and make sure to subscribe to us on any number of streaming audio services, including iTunes, Spotify, and Amazon. If you have any suggestions for topics to discuss, or you just want to reach out, or if you have an explanation for all this, you can reach out to us at podcasts@thegazette.com. And now that you listen to the On Iowa Politics podcast, make sure you're also subscribed to the On Iowa Politics newsletter, where every morning in your inbox, you'll get all the latest politics and government coverage from our team. You can subscribe to that On Iowa Politics newsletter at thegazette.com. And don't forget, finally, that the work of everyone you heard here today can be found on the pages and websites of the Quad City Times, Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier, Sioux City Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Muscatine Journal, Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. McFisto will play us out this week. If you know an Iowa band or musician who should be featured on the podcast, please send us a sound file. For Tom, Sarah, Jared, Todd, and our producer, Stephen, I'm Aaron Murphy. Thanks for listening.
Get a daily update from the Gazette with our daily news podcast. Add it to your podcast player or your Alexa-friendly device to get a bite-sized local news update each day. Check it out at thegazette.com/podcasts.